somebody that just likes cool military stuff, I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. A lot of stuff going on. President speaking, talk about the railroads, and joining us, I don't know where Montana man is. He ought to be in Montana, or else he'd be Idaho man. So Rob Schwartz joins us. Where are you? Montana, Idaho? What are you doing?
Montana headed to Idaho right now.
Oh, really? Is the lovely Alicia with you?
No, she's not, but... if we're on Friday, she'd probably be on.
Oh, do you think she can hop on with us for a few minutes? That's always the most interesting interview.
Yeah, that's what I told her. I said, well, I got to take her to Billings on Friday, so I figured if we're on, she'll be in the truck, and then
she got to be on.
Have a choice at that point.
Yeah, she could. She used to work for Petco, where the pets go, right?
She used to.
Yeah, she used to. Not anymore. She used to.
Negative.
Negative, right. So plans for Christmas? You're obviously going back to Idaho.
Nope, we're gonna be here.
What?
Well, the deciding factor was the Christmas tree. The Christmas tree was here, so this is where we're gonna be.
Wow. Okay.
So we've got it. We got a trip just after New Year's, so we're heading back to Idaho on the 2nd, and then we head south to Arizona the 3rd. So I didn't want to make multiple trips back and forth again since I'm going right now.
Well, why not? I mean, you have a $90,000 truck, so why would you not be all about spending as much time as you can in that, it's like a house on wheels, right?
Well, it's like a, Mustang jet, you need a knee board to run the thing to take notes on all the crap that goes on in here.
What?
I'm amazed I can talk to you on the phone right now, actually.
Because there's so much stuff. You got so much.
Yeah, it needs a heads-up device, is what it needs.
Well, I'm surprised it doesn't have one.
You know, I think that's where they'll go next. To look down at the display and try and manipulate that thing, it does take your eyes off the road.
Well, aren't there some cars that have heads-up displays now? I thought there was.
Don't think so.
Oh, really? I thought there was. I thought that was such a thing that there was heads-up displays. What's the feature that you didn't really know a lot about in your $90,000 truck that you now think is really pretty cool to have in a truck?
Well, all the lights and how you program the lights and the locks and how it turns on and off, you can all do through the display. So, you know, you can tell it, you know, honk the horn when you lock it, honk the horn when you don't, turn the seats on when you do the remote light or the remote start, or turn the heated steering wheel on at remote start, turn it on the remote start, just on manual start, all that
Whoa.
Crap. So you just press a button and your shit is tight when you get in.
So you can tell your truck what to do?
Yeah. You just program it.
Whoa.
And then the seats are programmed, mirrors are all programmed to a key fob. Like Alicia's got a key fob and I've got one. So whoever gets in the truck and sits in the driver's seat, everything just goes to wherever, you know, that key fob had it programmed at.
Yeah, but is that a good idea? Because that means, like, she's going to like the truck.
She's afraid to drive it because it doesn't have a key. She still hasn't driven it yet because she's too freaked out by the whole push-button start thing. So she is not even drove it.
She's freaked out by the key? What happens when she sees a black cat or something?
Yeah. No, we've got one of them, so she's freaked.
She's okay.
Good with that.
She's okay with a black cat, but the key fob throws her for a loop.
Yeah, I can't explain it.
Okay, is there anything that you don't like that you have on the truck that you think, yeah, I wish this wasn't here?
No, I haven't found that. And usually, I'm not a automatic let the vehicle do things for you type of guy, but. It's got a an automatic. Is that turned off? Automatic exhaust brakes. That when you can basically set your downhill speed when you're, you know, towing a load.
You have a Jacobs brake.
Yeah, they all come with them now. All the diesels come with them now, but this one's got an automatic seal, which. They never seem to work. Like the four-wheel drive on the tractor has an automatic mode where it'll sense, you know, hey, you're sliding, we're going to throw it in four-wheel drive. Well, that thing will get you tossed over a snowbank on its own. But this thing on the truck actually works like, you know, you want it to. It helps. It doesn't get you in trouble.
Amazing.
So short answer, I haven't found anything I do not like yet.
I respect that. What about, you made something you have to atone for. You made a comment a couple weeks ago, oh, there's snow on the ground, looks like it's going to be here for the all winter. And I look up and it's 58 degrees in Montana. So do you want to apologize for that comment or what?
No, we had a warm spell, but, I mean, shoot, yesterday, well, I was supposed to be going to Idaho yesterday, but we got Sunday about 5 inches, and then it was blowing 65-mile-an-hour gusts yesterday on the highway from Big Timber to Livingston. And when that happens, that snow blows across the road, gets a little warm in the day, and then it freezes at night, and then the next morning it's just, it was about 40 miles of sheet ice to get out of town yesterday, so it's here and there, it's back. There's snow on the ground now.
You know, the most dangerous road conditions normally occur when, let's see, you go to bed and there might be a little drizzle and then it freezes and then it snows. And so it looks like snow that fell overnight. You don't, the first people to get up and, you know, they get up early and you have disasters. But those middle temperatures, you need it to be like between 10 and 20. Or you need it to be above 40, because when you play between 20 and 40, you get snow that melts and then it turns to ice, and that's never a good thing. Never a good thing. Are you a good winter driver?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, this is extremes up by the ranch in Montana, because the drifts are insane, and when you get snow and wind, it blows everything flat. You know, those drifts behind shrubs, drifts behind, you know, banks on the road. You think you're driving in 4 inches of snow and all of a sudden you hit a 3-inch or a 3-foot drift at 30 miles an hour. And then, you're not going anywhere but on foot.
you got to wait till you got your chain and your strap in the back to pull somebody out, be a good neighbor and all that. My guest is Rob Schwartz. We're talking about, hold on, just some breaking news. The Associated Press is reporting, that the Boston Red Sox have confirmed that they will not rename the Green Monster the Judge Giancarlo Stanton Wall. Whoa, where did that come from?
Yeah.
So, as a Red Sox fan, how are you feeling these days? Gunnar refuses to speak about it, and you were giving me the wave off, like, no, it's too early. It's not too early, my friend. No, whoa! You guys are the B team now.
Well, I mean, you guys got all excited about Aaron Judge, like he's the savior and going to make all this stuff happen, and then what did he do in the playoffs last year? He freaking choked. He didn't hit shit.
He did two? He didn't hit He didn't hit against Cleveland, but what did he hit? Four home runs against Houston? Yeah, come on, man. Don't be a hater. So, B team status. You guys okay with that?
We haven't started freaking spring training yet.
Look, that's just the only reason we're going to do that is to fill up the coffers so we can pay the contracts, okay? Right? The Yankees need all the rest of you scrubs to pay to make salary, and so you guys got to play the game. Okay, all right. I didn't know you wanted to be like that, but how about world events? You have anything on your mind relative to world events?
God, I haven't even caught up this morning. I've been going gangbusters. I did catch a piece of that train guy, whoever that was, for about 5 minutes.
Cosentini.
Did he go work for a railroad after he got out?
Yeah, got out, went and worked for a railroad. So, yeah, well, who knew, right? Who knew?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just didn't, you know, it's kind of interesting because you see all that infrastructure, and you wonder, you know, who maintains it, how do they maintain it, you're looking at it and that's a lot of track. And then, you know, who governs speed? Who recommends it? Is it just like an interstate where there's speed limits at different spots? And is that how that works? Actually the interview is great, in terms of this is how we do it. This is how we do it on the railroad. And, you know, can you imagine the infrastructure cost in maintaining that infrastructure, in a state that you can use it all the time? Yikes, yikes, yikes.
I watched, you've driven on I-90 from North Dakota to, Butte. And, There's a line of track that runs pretty much the entire
right,
length of Montana.
Right next to it. Yep.
And you're tracking right next to it the whole time. Well, last summer they had a bunch of railroad ties. I mean, for hundreds of miles. you know, just bundles of railroad ties next to the track. And I'm thinking, how the hell are they going to change those railroad ties out, you know, without just shutting down, you know, Montana length worth of railroad track?
Right.
And they just did it in sections, and they had this. Me and my old man were going from, I think, the airport here, so we have about an hour of just staring at it. And
he's a Red Sox. He's a Red Sox fan too, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he goes to spring training every year. Him
right.
and his brother go down to Florida for 2 weeks and scout the team and text me every day on how they look and whether we should be throwing in the towel yet.
Yeah,
or,
tell him go ahead. Go ahead and take a pillowcase down with him so he can run it up the flagpole down there, just in case.
Anyway, we pass this machine that will not pull up any track, but jerk out a railroad tie and then stuff another one back up underneath it. And then they just leave the track in place and go down tie by tie, jerking them out and putting them back under. It was pretty impressive to see. And shit, they were done in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, he was telling me about that. I you know, how do you do that? And he was trying to explain that. And I said, wow, that's incredible. And because he said the same thing. He said there had to be something that you did, because otherwise you would be shutting it down, and you just can't do that with the railroad, you know, because what you're doing is you're shutting down your revenue source. We lost him.
You still there?
Yeah, you went silent.
Yeah, I think I hit a dead spot. I shouldn't be. I should be pretty clear.
No, the quality's great. What is that was interesting. And then, you know, going 80 and a 30 on their first run of this, you know, this train, like, what? Come on, man. Is that just I had made a mistake and whatnot? Because if it is, that's just can't do that.
Well, wasn't it supposed to be advertised as like the, you know, uber fast option deal? I don't know if they were trying to make a point or.
No, you don't. That's what they said the Titanic was doing, trying to make mission, right? And, you know, trying everybody else going a little bit further south. No, we go south, it's going to add time. We don't want to do that. Yeah, but there's icebergs up here. And so I guess you get what you get. But yesterday, I mean, just the thought of it is just, you know, 80 and a 30? That's rough, man. That is
Does the debt toll come up at all, or
no,
has that changed?
I haven't seen any official final verdict on it. But, no, you know, the other thing, again, you know, when we were talking, it's a, in two separate cases, I was introduced to the power of the railroads. And one was, we don't control the flood wall. The railroad does. When they tell us that we can close it, we can close it. And my reaction was, what? What kind of bullshit is that? I'm like, oh yeah, that's the way it is, okay? And there is no wiggle room. Nobody compels the railroad. I'm like, damn. They have that kind of power? And then, so I kind of got a real quick, hip pocket class. About the railroad going through the Dakota territories in the 1870s and whatnot, as the nation was settled and you know, the land grants they got to go ahead and build the railroad, to build cities, to site cities and infrastructure. I mean, really crazy kind of power that the railroads had. And then the other one was, in my ward that I represented, there was a cemetery. And they were getting special assessed for the permanent flood protection that went in after a flood. Well, how does a cemetery pay that? And the demographics of death now are more people are getting cremated, which is cheaper, and so the cemetery not making the same kind of money. So now they're going to get special assessed on this huge plot of land that doesn't produce any more revenue. And so, I had to call the archivist at the North Dakota State Legislature to get me a decision that was done when North Dakota was still a territory. And so she got it for me. And so there's language in what was called the territory code that migrated into what became the century code, which is North Dakota law. And they simply, this is kind of interesting. It might sound boring right now, but I trust me, it's not. And so there was this thing about cemeteries and other special types of land uses would be exempted in the territory code. It didn't get into the century code. So she also sent me the minutes from the meeting. And the conclusion later on was they simply forgot to stick the sentence in the legislation. Because there was no, in the hearing, nobody addressed it. In fact, there was in the hearing, there was the discussion of, you know, we're okay with this, let's talk about this, let's change this, but the thing addressing. But it was really interesting to go back into territorial law, right? And when the state was actually formed, you know, the modifications they made, to create the century code. So a little bit of history, but again, astounding, that the railroads don't have to pay any of that. And they look at you like, if you're a city coming after the railroad, they're like, yeah, probably not, stud. Go away. So, anyway. All right. Let me ask you this. What do you think of the president? He's much in the news. Good job, bad job? What do you think?
My opinion hadn't really changed recently. You look at what he's doing and who's around him and what they're doing, and you got to say, good job. And then you look at his communications, and you got to go, God dang it, can't you just shut up and let your people work? They're doing good. Is kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be the lament. But you know what? That's him, right? I think one of the things we're all learning is, if you shoot at him, he's going to shoot back.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who you are.
You can be, a rap singer. You can be a basketball player. Then you open your pie hole, he's coming back at you.
Right, and you could be the Secretary of State. It's going to come at you. Email. Mac, I'm curious about Montana Man's thoughts on the whole transgender thing. I thought the pieces that you did the last week are pretty illuminating. Didn't realize the subtleties of the issue. Curious about his thoughts. Transgender service.
Yeah, they're pretty much in line with yours. I was amazed at, one, the number, and then, again, the definition.
Right.
You know, so it's not someone that's in the pre- or post-op pipeline, it's anybody who even thinks about it. Hey, I'm just not comfortable in my own body, and now they are in that category was a little bit enlightening to me. I mean, because that, in that case, they should have, those folks should have no problem serving. You know, they can be a widget, like you say, as long as they're stable enough and deploy. You know, they can get on the field.
How about anything that keeps you, you never did recruiting, did you?
No.
How about anything that makes you a non-widget? We generally frown on that. Yes?
Yeah. I mean, you watch some great Marines having to go away because, fill in the blank of what their issue was. Knee problem, back problem, guys that got hurt and wanted to be a player and were told, you got to go home because, you can't be a widget. You're non-deployable.
That's horrible, too, especially when you have good guys and they've got injured in combat. You know, and sometimes it's blown out a knee, and the guy's just a great young leader, courageous as all hell, and he can't stay in. His knee's just now too jacked up, and he wants to, and he'll do anything.
I watched a bunch of them at that, sergeant, staff sergeant, where they've committed, a good chunk of their career building time, you know, from 20 to 30 years of age, and all of a sudden at 30 they're told, you got to go. Yeah, you got a great record, but physically you are a non-widget. Those are the ones that you know, kind of make you think. Because the guy's got to go find another career.
Right.
You know, at 30 as a sergeant, staff sergeant time frame. And
the good thing is that hopefully they'll be, you know, in those cases, you know, a lot of those guys will get medically retired. And that's eases the pain, the financial pain of making those moves. But
they can't live on that the rest of their life.
No.
They still gotta go.
Right.
Build a career.
Right. I'm with you. It
takes the thing away.
It's brutal stuff. Did you hear, I was talking to Cosentini about a guy I talked to that was affected by Agent Orange in Korea. Did you hear that portion of the conversation? So I still do my radio show and Rob knows this, but I still do my radio show into North Dakota. And so I was a friend of mine wrote a letter about they had the mall in Grand Forks. Macy's left, and they auctioned off their space. They were paying $6 million for the assessed value was $6 million of their space. When they put it up for auction, they received $400,000 for it. So he wrote this article about the flawed nature of assessments, you know, and that the only thing real is price. And anytime you try to extrapolate that is, a lot of times wrongheaded. So he and I are talking. And so I said, well, Rob, you know, how you doing? You know, and he says, Mac, I'm struggling physically. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, you know, I was affected by Agent Orange in Korea in the 60s when I was there in the Army. And he started telling me about his unit suffered 25 KIA in the year they were there operating at the DMZ. And it was like 1965 or something like that. He said, nobody even knows about it, that we were getting it on with the Koreans all the time there.
And just scrapping at the DMZ?
Yeah, scrapping at the DMZ. And he said, it's, you know, we did it all the time. But you won't hear about it. And so, and then he says this to me. And, you know, and I got emotional when I told Cosentini. I tried to tell Cosentini and then I got choked up. But he said, I went on a walk the other day and he said, you know, I just fill my shoes with my own urine. I can't control myself. And it's the Agent Orange in me that's having this effect on my body. And, you know, he said, but you know, Mac, I love this country and I know it's not perfect and sometimes people suffer, but I realize that I'm not bitter. And I thought, who the hell says stuff like that? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you what, if you want to hear a pissed off person, you know, dial up Mac when he finds out he has Agent Orange. You know, I would not have been saying his name's Ralph Kingsbury. And it was just like, where do we find such men? You know, that looks at his affliction with Agent Orange as in the context of the nation's need to fight wars and not being perfect. What? So, we're pretty lucky in this country to have people like that who believe like that and who go and serve and thinking about and Cosentini made a pitch for, you know, some organizations that will talk to veterans about medications when those medications collide in your body, you know, what can happen. And he said, you know, his experience with guys who went, that he knew is that this organization, I wish I could remember the name of it, reduced their medications by about 70%. I was like,
nice.
Wow. Yeah, wow. Give us an update on your experience with the VA in Montana. You've had a good experience up there, yes?
No. Ooh. I gave up on them. I'm in Gunner's corner on this. I gave up on, my home VA is in Idaho. There's a clinic there. And I was having tingling in my fingers and feet, and I was trying to figure it out. Doctors here said it was anxiety. Actually, the VA lady said it was anxiety. And I said, well, I want to go to a neurologist. And she's like, well, where? I said, well, in Montana. And she said, well, to make that happen, you know, we've got to move heaven and earth, and it's a different region, and we don't know if that can happen. And I was like, well, look, I'm not driving 10 hours to Boise from Big Timber, Montana, to do this. We should be better than that. And she just looked at me and said, we're not. I was like, okay, I'm done with you. You know, I'll just do this on my own. So I go do my annual exam every year, and that's it. Because they require that. They'll quit giving you benefits if you don't show up for that annual exam. So I go do that, and they send me heartburn medicine once a year, and that's it.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, so I'm done. It's too difficult, and it takes too goddamn long is the problem just to make any of that happen. I mean, for me to go do that whole thing with the cancer in my kidney, I'd still be waiting for surgery.
I thought you did.
At this point.
I thought you did that through the VA.
No. Oh. Fuck no. No. That was all. I went in.
Really?
They found it.
Did we have to just crush the third hour moratorium on the F word like that?
Are we banned from the F word now?
That's the Gunner's ban. The F word in the third hour. You just went to it naturally. Ah, fuck no.
I didn't know Gunner was making fucking rules.
Only when it suits him, then he turns around and breaks them. Here's his rule. So you'll love this, all right, because this is quintessential Gunner.
Is this part of New Indian Code or some shit?
No. This is just, so he and I are on the air when the news breaks about Bo Bergdahl. Bo Bergdahl will not serve any additional brig time. And I read it, and then I said the F word about somewhere between 8 and 15 times. I'm not exactly sure. So a couple days later, he counsels me. He goes, hey, man, you know, there's people that listen, you know, and they might be listening at work. And he like, you cuss too much. You can't do that. I'm like, and then me being a nice guy, I'm like, I'm sorry, man. Who is listening? He said, well, Tina's listening. I have other friends. I'm like, all right. So now, I don't know, 3-4 days later, boom, he drops the F-bomb. And I said, hey, wait a minute. I thought there's a moratorium in the third hour. He says, well, nobody would notice if you didn't bring it up. And I said, what? Yeah. He said, quit bringing it up when I do it. Nobody would notice. And I said, you're a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So he made me feel bad. And then he like routinely violates it. And now he just completely disregards it. So anyway. Just so you know the background on that.
Yeah. It is, it does show up. Because sometimes when I'm in Idaho and shoeing horses, I got like a little Bluetooth speaker I got on the truck.
Yeah.
And I'll just pipe the radio out. And you know, you've got a 65-year-old lady holding her backyard pony for me while I put shoes on it. And then there's my buddies dropping the F-bomb coming out of the pickup at volume 10. You know, it's kind of like, just try and it didn't happen.
She
looks at me and she goes, "Do you know these people?" I'm like, "Well, yeah, we're all Marines together." She's like, "Oh, that kind of explains it then, doesn't it?" So, yeah, there you go.
Did she think we were stupid?
she enjoyed the conversation. She just didn't expect the Marine language.
I heard when I used to be in the over-the-airwave business, I would use like softcore profanity, hell, damn, crap, stuff like that. And I would occasionally like a very, very nice, you know, lady would call, elderly lady, and say, "Michael, I just want to say I wish you wouldn't use the profanity that you use on the air." And she says, you know, using profanity is a sign of, you know, is a sign of a weakness. And I said, "Oh, ma'am," I said, "first of all, let me apologize. I'm really sorry." And I said, "I don't cuss because I'm weak. I said, I cuss because I'd like to." And I said, I go to profanity like a baby goes to his mother's nipple. She said, I knew calling was a bad idea. I said, "No, I'm really sorry. I don't mean to offend you." She said, "No." She said, "I love your show. I love your show, but I just wanted to call and tell you." I said, "All right, I'm really sorry. I'll try to do better." She said, "No, you won't." I said, "For a couple days." But I said, "Sometimes when you get angry." She said, "Well, I will say this. You normally only reserve it for when you're being really angry or you're being funny." I said, "Yeah, I don't like say it at people or anything like that." She says, "Okay, well, you just try to do better." I said, "Yes, ma'am." So I know how to put the choir boy uniform on and get correct when I have to. So yeah, that's the profanity story in hour three. Now, I will say this though. I think there's a waiver whenever you are talking about the VA. I think you just claim the VA exemption and then boom, you're good.
Yeah, I think that's a good call.
Yeah, I do.
And it just naturally comes out in that conversation.
Yeah. I do. You've been around the world a little bit. There's a story this morning, an Ohio man just sent me a headline. And this was, I think it happened yesterday, or God only knows when it happened, but it's getting reported now. Yemeni rebels shot another missile into Saudi Arabia, and this one was supposedly aimed at the, I'm not sure how they knew, but they said it was aimed at the palace in Saudi Arabia. You have some experience in those kind of places. Any thoughts on that?
How freaking big a missile did that far? They shot it from Yemen?
From Yemen.
Well, I don't have a map in front of me, but okay, it's got to go pretty goddamn far.
Yeah, I would tell you that it's the canister looks like your water cooler. No, your hot water heater, right? And then stack about three of them on each other, and then increase the diameter by about a third. And that's what you got. That's the missile that got shot out of Yemen, because one of them failed and then skidded in the desert, and then they yoked it up. So that's what you got. In fact, Nikki Haley had a press conference in front of one of them last week. So there's just this trash missile behind her, and it's Gigantor, and she's standing in front of it and talking and trash talking the Iranians who are supplying the missiles. So anyway, thoughts on that?
That's kind of scary that they got that kind of shit in hand to be able to use it. I mean, that's not small stuff. I mean, that surprised me that they've got a missile that big to cover that kind of range. That's scary, I guess. First thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, I don't... You know, again, when I had John Allen on, you know, one of the things we were talking about in the Middle East, and I asked him, I said, Talk to us about the Middle East in the context of the Iranian Saudi conflict. And he said, Mac, he said, everything in the Middle East comes from that. He said, and you, there can't be any kind of understanding of events in the Middle East if you don't understand the Saudi-Iranian conflict that goes on. They're essentially their Cold War and fighting by proxy around the region. He said, but that's exactly what it is. He said, and that's why the events in Iraq are so important, especially to the Saudis, because what happens to the Saudis or the Iraqis relative to Iran, and then the Kurds relative to Iran, paves the way for the Persian Empire again. And he said, and that's not going to be in anybody's interest to have that happen. But the Saudis are not as strong as the Iranians. And there are chief ally in the region. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge. Have you ever been to Yemen? You were in Yemen.
Yeah, I was in Yemen. We were in Yemen.
No, you were in Somalia. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, but we stopped in Yemen on a view at one point. And no. Might have been Saudi. And we got run out of there. The ships got run out because they had lost track of basically BBIED in Yemen. So I was headed to the training area in, you know, we had five buses and most of the VLT headed to the training area, and then they lost track of the BBIED in Yemen. And I mean, we stopped, turned around, got back on the ship, and just headed to sea.
Hey,
so that's the closest I got to Yemen.
Explain your acronym for everybody.
Vehicle-borne IED.
Okay.
So they had a car that they knew had explosives in it that they had been tracking in Yemen, and it looked like it was heading our way, and then they lost it. So
oops.
We DD'd out of there.
Yeah, that's never a positive thing when you lose that track.
Yeah, and then you got to shut the, I mean, whatever, two, three, whatever. What's the exercise we do with those guys every year? Shut that thing. You know, that's a 3-week exercise if you've been planning for 6 or 8 months, and just to throw that thing on the shelf and head out. It was a pretty big deal.
The.
And you read that book, From Beirut to Jerusalem?
No, I have not. By Tom.
Friedman.
No, I've heard it's great. I've heard it's great. I've never read it.
Yeah, no, I read it, I think, on that deployment. That was probably in, God dang, I don't know when that, before that. But I just brought it back with me just to read it again, because if you want to understand the Palestine, Jerusalem, that region of the world, and how the angst spreads from region to the rest of the Middle East, it describes it pretty well. And that book is, you know, whatever, 20-some years old.
Yeah.
And still extremely relevant into what we got going on in the world right now, and probably forever.
He's one of those guys who, Tom Friedman, that is a speaker, in my opinion, is a speaker of the truth. And when guys like him talk, you know, most journalists you can take with a grain of salt. Tom Friedman you can take to the bank. You know, he tends to be pretty sound in terms of his analysis and pretty spot on in terms of the things that he talks about. So I always he's one of the people that there's a guy named Michael Gordon who writes for the New York Times, and he writes military stuff for him, and I remember reading his stuff when I was in Iraq the first time, and so many people just had no clue about what was going on in Iraq. And then you read an article, you see a headline that catches your eye, you read the article, and it's like, what's that guy's name? Because that guy just, he told the truth. He just nailed it. And but Friedman, very, 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 it's like when Zinni speaks, right? When Zinni speaks, yeah. McNamara listens. To whatever Zinni says, do what Zinni says. He's like the kid who flunked kindergarten. He knows where the balls are. He knows where the graham crackers are. He knows where the milk is, right? He knows where the blocks and the triangles are. The guy's a genius for at least a week, okay? The dude who flunked kindergarten. And I'm a Todd Friedman fan. You know what? You don't see his work that much anymore.
No, you don't.
I guess you have to. I don't know if he's not writing as much or if he's doing other things. Because you used to see him his column all the time in the New York Times. In the New York Times, and so I know because I'd see him, and then you'd see what's her face. The woman Maureen Dowd and her poison pen. Yeah, so I would remember watching, looking for his stuff, and then seeing some headline about her, and going, "Wow, she is never afraid to get the scalpel out and do a little carving on somebody." So anyway, all right, so you're just driving all day today?
Yeah, I got to, I'm helping my buddy out moving. So I'm hauling a horse trailer, dropping it off at his place in Idaho. He's going to load it, and then I'm going to bring it back Thursday when I come. So that's going to add a little bit of time to the ride, but mostly. And then I got to get to the shipping place before it closes, so of course our Christmas presents are not in the mail yet.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's going to be a pretty penny, because I'm guessing it's going to have to be like 2-day express or some expensive shit like that.
Good thing you're making all that big cash up in Montana.
Yeah, it's going to cost me like $80 to ship a $20 Christmas present.
Well, you know what? Serves you right. Why didn't you get on it?
Not my department. I had to take over that department because it's the 19th. So.
What?
I relieved. Yeah.
You relieved somebody?
I relieved Montana 5, yeah, from Christmas shipping duties because it wasn't going to friggin' happen.
What? Oh yeah. My God! How could, all right. I want.
In our house, there's not Christmas cards. There's holiday season cards because we can't get them out before Christmas for some reason.
What?
Yeah, my job is to stand for the Christmas picture. That's my role in it, and then I let the rest of it happen on its own.
All right. Do you have the same issue Mike had relative to stocking stuffers?
No.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has that issue like Mike has it.
Huh.
Yeah, I was listening to it. He's just telling me, like, first of all, you don't buy your wife a toothbrush, okay, for Christmas. I don't care if you're sticking it in her stocking or whatever. That's not an approval.
Yeah.
That's not. This is and my guideline for Christmas, even with stocking stuffers. If it's something that I would buy myself, like, why do I need you to buy it for me? I want you to buy me something that I would buy myself. So, like, why don't you get her a bracelet from, I don't know, like a nice jewelry store, Cartier or someplace. Get her something nice or little and just stick that in the box and stick it in. Oh, Mac, that's not how you do it. I tried it once. Oh. Woe is me. The world hates me. This is why none of it works, and this is why stocking stuffers are horrible. Yeah, he was driving around Granbury looking for stocking stuffers.
Well, I'll be doing that this afternoon. Maybe tomorrow.
They used to be proud men, ladies and gentlemen. They used to be proud men.
Yes.
They used to be warriors. They used to be warriors. Now, not so much. Not so much. All right, how's the so road conditions in Montana? So give us you're in western Montana, yes?
Yeah, I'm just coming in between Livingston and Bozeman now, coming over the Bozeman Pass, and the truck is telling you there's a winter storm warning, and a map pops up with an overlay on it to show you where this warning is in effect. So I'm just about driving into that. Got that going for me.
All right, here's something. Here's an email entitled, "That Damn Truck." Can he defecate and urinate inside the truck? Will it evacuate his waste?
No. It won't. I still got to stop for that.
All right. That
would be nice.
It's a legitimate question, though, yes?
Yeah.
I do. I think it is.
Because it does slow you down. When you make this much, spend this much time on the road, I set the, trip meter, and then it's a race. How fast I make it door to door on this trip. I think the record is 4 hours and 53 minutes, and that was by myself, of course. Because when your significant other gets in the truck with a full thing of coffee and a half gallon of water to start the trip, we ain't making time this time.
Yeah, that water.
There's no, and for half the trip, you're out of cell service, and you're coming across the big hole in between Montana and Idaho, and there's nothing. So if you got to stop and take a leak, you're piling off into a snowbank on the side of the road and praying nobody's coming. Although Montana 5 has gotten pretty good at hiding behind passenger door and squatting next to the highway, so I will give her kudos on that.
The last time we did that, the wind was blowing really bad, but there was no other course of action that we could execute.
Yep.
It was in South Dakota. We were on our way to St. Louis to the NCAA Frozen Four. I was going to do a little broadcasting from there. My family, Colleen was screaming. So she gets out. Susan says, "Squat and pee." So Colleen does. We're in the car laughing, and the wind whips that stuff. It like hits the car. It was your basic shit show. It was awesome. People screaming and yelling, Colleen with her pants down. It was all good. It's all good. So yeah, I'm a
calling a horse trailer though, because you can get in there behind the horses or in between them, and you've got cover and you're out of the wind.
Interesting. All right. First of all, I appreciate you doing this, and we'll see you a couple more times this week. But drive safe, and good luck with the stocking stuffers.
Yeah. I'll tell you how it goes.
All right. Montana man here. See you, Rob. Thanks.
All right, man. We'll see you.
There you have it. Once mighty and proud men. Now they do ordinary things. They're ordinary human beings now. I kid you not, Colleen, that was hilarious. Yeah, we're in the middle of nowhere, South Dakota. And she's like, I have to go now. Okay. So anyway. Yeah, the boys and her brothers are just howling inside the car. Patrick had a situation when he was probably about 9. We were driving to North Dakota the first time we ever moved up there. And I'm driving a truck. Susan's behind me in the car. Patrick's with her driving the Ford Ranger. And I think Catherine and John were with me. I'm not sure. It was some arrangement like that. And Patrick's got to go pee. And so Susan says, "Your father's not going to stop." And she says, pee in a bottle. So, now there's an art to peeing in a bottle for those of you that have never done it. And here's the art. The art is, you have to, like, be away from the aperture and pee into the bottle. Okay? If you, for some reason, if you cap the top with your appendage, then what's going to happen is at some point it's going to deplace enough air to dislodge the appendage from that position. And then what you're going to get is you're going to get a fountain of urine spraying, right? And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And you should hear them tell that story, right? So he's peeing in the bottle. He's got his wiener in the bottle, and all of a sudden the air pops it out. And then you got this. People screaming in the car, right? Dogs and cats. Awesome stuff, right? Just awesome stuff. Oh my God, so funny. All right. Today, interesting program. You're going to hear Will Cosentini here right now. You've heard him on the program before. Most recently, you've heard him talking about the Navy, going to the Army-Navy game, and then after the Army-Navy game, after we talked about the Army-Navy game, it was talking about how does the Navy fix itself? How do they literally right the ship? And so he, a Naval Academy grad, 1985, so that's most recent. But Will got out 4 years ago and went to work for a railroad in Florida, and he's now working for one up in Kansas City, Kansas, I think. So you're going to hear him explaining, if you will, like we do with F-18 stuff. You're going to hear him explain who owns railroad tracks, how it's maintained, stuff like that. So, Will, a great guy. You also hear him talk about veteran drug addiction, veteran prescription drug addiction, which is a huge problem. So, don't touch that dial. Quality stuff. Anyway, have a great day. My thanks to Will Cosentini for coming on. My thanks to John Ubaldi for coming on. Most of all, my thanks to you all for listening. So, and then for Rob Schwartz, Montana man. He's a funny dude. I had never met him before we went to Afghanistan. And as I said, we all these guys working in the same unit. Yeah, we didn't have any idiots. None. It was incredible. It was incredible. Have a great day. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.